Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Let's not be naive. It is a very active thing that you have to be all over all the time. Otherwise, you're going to lose money and also be taken advantage of.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed, and today we are joined by Jacob Wilson. Jacob is joining us from Phoenix, Arizona. He is the managing partner of Crux Commercial Partners. He is focused on commercial loan brokering. He's also a commercial real estate investor with around 300 units of multifamily and also industrial and office assets. Jacob, can you tell us a little bit more about your background and what you're currently focused on?
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, appreciate you having me on the show. Secondly, what am I focused on right now is growing the brokerage. We're in a pretty big ramp up and transition right now in growth mode. And then secondly is making sure all the assets are stable and making sure we have contractors to complete the work needed on each of the units that are currently vacant.
Gotcha. Is there a lot of vacancy in your portfolio right now?
No, not really a ton at all. We have it come due here and there, unless there's certain deals that we're currently stabilizing. And in that situation, what we try to do is keep the vacancy as minimal as possible while we're going through and turning those units. And then we try to create a little bit of vacancy as well to be able to turn those future units. So there's a little bit of method to the madness and how we do it, but it is a constant ongoing obstacle.
Talking about your loan brokering, Jacob, where do most of your loans or most of your transactions come from?
Pretty much all of them are referral based. We got a pretty great name in the industry. We always do exactly what we say we're going to do. So there, it builds trust with the bankers that we do business with. It builds trust with the real estate agents that we do business with. And all the past clients obviously refer us their friends and family and everything else. So it literally almost 100% referral based. And that's across the whole company. So it's the biggest compliment I think one can get. So it means you're doing a good job.
Makes a lot of sense. You're focused on the growth of your commercial loan brokerage right now. We're recording at the end of the first quarter of 2024. Looking very big picture, Jacob, and I'm hoping you can correct me here, but we're at a moment in the market cycle where commercial real estate transactions may not necessarily be at an all-time low, but there's way less commercial real estate transacting right now. And when you consider what's happened to interest rates the last couple of years, there are not a lot of people looking to refinance unless they have to because of the bridge debt that they went with back when all pastures were green and everyone was in the threes and maybe the fours of 2021 and very early 22. So it's interesting to hear that you focus on the growth of your brokerage when I would imagine you're experiencing some serious headwinds right now, Jacob. Where am I wrong here?
If I look back just at my transactions individually, along with my team, obviously, that supports me historically, we did about 125 to 130 transactions on average in 21 and 22. And then in 23, we did 116. So we didn't really actually see that large of a decline from a unit perspective for an individual loan perspective. So the units have still been there. And what we're doing is we're taking the team approach that I had and that supported me, and we're rolling that out to all the different brokers to allow them to focus primarily on business development and support them better than anyone's ever been supported before from a loan broker perspective. So we're doing things a little bit differently. We are allowing people to have what really no loan broker has out there, and that's a little bit of time to live back in their lives And no one's missing a beat from a quality perspective because the people we have on our roster are just so phenomenal. If you look up and down, our personnel is unmatched. The level of experience that they have, I always say, experience isn't measured in years in the business. It's measured in the amount of deals that you've gotten done. And our people have touched more files than anyone. I don't know another commercial loan brokerage out there that's doing this many units. So we're taking that approach. We're supporting our people to the maximum. And because we're going to have such great support, we're going to have a huge influx of great talent from a broker perspective. So that's what we're doing.
You all are focused on growing right now by acquiring other loan brokerages. Is that what you were saying?
No, what we're doing is we're actually converting bankers to brokers because they have the experience. They have the know-how of the industry. However, what they haven't done is this before, meaning the broker side of it. And we've come up with a mechanism that allows them to make that leap from corporate America to private world and do it without having big valleys associated with it. Because we've done it before, we also are able to provide them with support so that they understand exactly what the roadmap looks like and what the underwriting would look like from institution to institution that they may not know. We have processes in place to provide consistency to them and what they can see and what they can expect on a day-to-day basis, which allows them to not have a huge loss in their first year, but really just to smoothly transition into the life that really they long for, but haven't had the ability to do because there's so much risk associated with it. And bankers really hate risk. So that's what we're doing. And don't get me wrong, we've brought over people from other institutions as well, but we're not acquiring the businesses. We're bringing people over that really want to be around top talent. They want to be supported better than they've ever been supported before. And then they also want to have processes and a bigger company in place so they don't have to run their own business. They can just focus on getting deals.
It sounds like as a business, Crux is focused on gaining market share, even though we're experiencing a down moment in the market cycle. Gaining market share by bringing more bankers onto your platform to operate as loan brokers. That makes sense. Tell us a little more about what you're seeing in the marketplace right now with regards not just to transactional volume, but to the loans that banks and Fannie and Freddie are making available right now by comparison to what you were seeing last year.
Really, the biggest hindrance in the market, well, there's two of them. Rates obviously impact the debt service coverage ratios, which then limit the proceeds. But really more than anything else, it's a lack of liquidity within the different institutions is one of the biggest hurdles for us. So we're seeing a lot of lenders that either haven't changed or are on the opposite end where they just don't have any capital left and they have to have compensating balances on hand that come with the loan. As far as Freddie and Fannie go, there's a few additional restrictions associated with it, but we're not seeing real big changes there. If you look back at 08, 09, really what happened was there's also a big capital crunch within a lot of the community banks and even some of the larger institutions. And there wasn't as many debt funds to pick up the pieces. It was Freddie, Fannie, LifeCos, CMBS. Those were the primary ways to fund deals during that time outside of the relationships that you'd already built. So we are seeing a little bit of reversion back to those similar things, but it's really become somewhat of a debt fund driven world for the larger deals in the marketplace because they aren't hamstrung by the regulations that the banks are hamstrung by. So they are able to take riskier loans on that have a higher yield for them to offset that risk. So it's different, but it's kind of the same thing again that we saw the last time there was fallout in the market.
Well, I'm certainly hoping the fallout right now won't equate to what happened in 08 and 09. I'm more of a residential investor anyways. So how is that impacting borrowers right now?
Well, it's impacting them from multiple different ways, but primarily it's rehab deals, construction deals that were underwritten to a 4.5% rate. Notes are coming due. Now the loan only supports 60% of what it did before because rates are 6%, 6.5%, whatever the effective rate for that individual deal is. And now they're facing a large equity injection. So it's either A, pony up the cash if they have it, B, find an equity investor, or C, exit that deal. And those deals you're seeing hit the market here and there. And the good news is there's so much capital on the sidelines that I don't think we're going to see what we saw last time because they're, except for maybe an office, large scale, large box office anyways. So there's so much money on the sidelines that we don't have that lack of buyer pool that's out there. Once it hits a certain level of pricing, there's plenty of buyers to buy those assets that well qualified for the loans at the lower loan amounts. So I really don't think this is an 08, 09 moment, except for probably in the one caveat of large box office.
And it sounds like for those owners who have to refinance right now, there are fewer lender options available to them. And some of them are going to be at higher interest rates because they're treating it like a higher risk debt asset anyways.
It depends is always the answer, right? If we're talking about office specifically, if it's an owner user, pretty much every lender wants an owner user deal. It's how big can the owner user actually go into the whole space and eat up? Is there that big of a need for them? Why do banks want the owner user deals? Because it comes with the deposits. You get all the transactions, you get the deposits, you get the merchant services, you get all the different bells and whistles that goes along with it, which makes it a more economical deal for those institutions to take on. Plus, you can underwrite to the owner user, which then is a different method from an investment perspective and allows you to really gauge the quality of the repayment source. So with those deals, we're seeing some of the best pricing out there. We just quoted one at 135 over the treasury this week. So we're seeing some really, really quality deals that are still for those big box offices. With that said, that's not
for owner users.
For owner users. Now for investors, yeah, it's a little bit more of a bloodbath and a lot more questions than historically because there's not as much infill as there once was. So it's market driven. It's current tenant mix driven. It's lease expiration date driven. It's market vacancy rate driven. There's a lot of different drivers that allow the lenders to pull back the curtain even more than just face value of is this big box office or not. Then allow for good decision-making and some mitigations to happen.
Jacob, let's transition the conversation here. We have the freedom as podcasters with the Best Ever Podcast of assuming that we have a sophisticated audience because we actually do. So we can assume, Jacob, right now that our listeners are familiar with the situation that people who got bridge debt a couple of years ago have found themselves in. That doubling interest rates have constrained DSCRs, which means the amount of capital that you can borrow is less, capital injection, all of the things. Talk to me, Jacob, and to our listeners. I'm an apartment owner operator, so primarily apartments, one office building. Thankfully, it's boutique and there's plenty of high demand. I'm on the main drag in a nice, walkable, historic neighborhood within Cincinnati, Ohio. But I'm out there looking for deals right now, and I'm wondering what my debt is going to look like. I can get into specifics of an example for you, but what are the kinds of things that I should expect right now? And what are the things that I can be doing to prepare myself or my loan package for you, the broker, to make me look as compelling a borrower as possible?
So what can you expect? Obviously, there's not as many lenders doing as aggressive a lending as before. So what you can expect is some similarities to how the deal was underwritten, but also a little bit more scrutiny on the underwriting of the deal. So you need to be able to be wise enough to understand the hurdles associated with the deal and how to mitigate those hurdles. And you need to work with someone who's going to help support and guide you along that way, whether it's me, whether it's someone else. It doesn't really matter. Even if it's that you got a great relationship with a banker, that's okay too. But more scrutiny is probably the biggest thing I would say, because the lenders don't have as much capital to lend. They're going to be more stringent on how they lend it out. So that's number one. Number two is liquidity. Liquidity is always king. So the more cash you have on hand, the easier the underwriting is going to be, because you can navigate things better than those without capital. You're going to have more thresholds. For example, in multifamily, there's a lot of lenders that have put into place a minimum historical DSCR rather than just underwriting it to a pro forma DSCR. Now, don't get me wrong, there's still some out there that will just underwrite it to a pro forma DSCR, but there's been a little bit of a shift there. So more hurdles, more navigating, more explanations, and you need to be on your stuff.
That's about as optimistic as an answer as I would expect in late March of 2024, Jacob, if you can sense the sarcasm in my voice. More hurdles, more stringent lenders, especially given that they have limited funds available to be lent. Do you lend in Ohio and Kentucky?
We've done deals all over. I've definitely done deals out there, multiple of them. Our bread and butter is in the Pacific Northwest, but we got one guy on hand that all he does is research lenders all day, every day. And he comes from a bank. So this isn't just some Joe Schmo off the street or some guy offshore researching. We look up every deed recorded in an area that is any associated with the subject property that we are looking at.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe. Do you want to do bigger and better commercial real estate deals? Take your real estate capital raising efforts to new heights with syndicationattorneys.com. With more than 20 years of real estate and investing experience, syndicationattorneys.com goes beyond just creating legal documents. They educate you on ethical and legal capital raising strategies. Plus, they offer a host of free resources, including their best-selling capital raising books, numerous articles, and their popular podcast, Raise Private Money Legally. At syndicationattorneys.com, they do more so you can do more, deals, bigger deals, and better deals. So if you want attorneys with premier experience helping syndicators and fund managers raise capital, go to syndicationattorneys.com today to schedule an appointment and unlock your maximum capital raising potential today. That's syndicationattorneys.com. This offer is not available to Florida residents.
Jacob, it sounds like you have as much experience with Cincinnati as the vast majority of people who want to invest in apartments here. Let's go with that. There are a lot of people out there looking to get into apartments in markets like Cincinnati, Ohio, because for the Midwest, we're a major metro area. We do have positive population growth. We're still seeing, on the whole, rent increases as opposed to decreases. A lot of things that like the Southwest and Southeast have been experiencing, especially metros, some of the metros, not so much in Florida, but like Dallas, Phoenix, the negative rent growth, the crazy amounts of supply that are coming on market here soon, those are not issues that we experience here. So a lot of people want to get into apartments right now in places like Cincinnati. So let's say a general partnership is looking to take down a 100 unit apartment complex in the greater Cincinnati area for $10 million. purely hypothetical. $100,000 a door is a number we all got accustomed to a few years ago. They have a value add business plan. There's a little bit of vacancy. They're going to have to increase rents to get up to market. They're going to struggle with the 1.25 DSCR day one based on the day one financials, but it pro forma is much better than that after they've gotten through year one or year two. This ownership group, let's say that they're based out of the San Francisco Bay Area. No one in the general partnership is local to Cincinnati, but they do have some experience with smaller multifamily, including successful exits of properties under 20 units, let's say. Based on what I'm describing right now, Jacob, what advice do you have for this hypothetical general partnership looking to buy this hypothetical 100-unit property in my market?
What advice do I have for them?
And what expectations would you set with them? I'm not asking about specific loan terms, but what advice and expectations would you have for someone? We're talking about acquisitions here, not a refi out of a bridge loan kind of situation.
So my advice for everyone right now is to expect rates to stay the same for the foreseeable future. Underwrite it to where we're at, not where you hope it will go. That would be my biggest piece of advice for them. And then also make sure you got great management, because management is key in an area that you're not from historically. So make sure you do really extensive research on who you're going to pick, because I too own in the Midwest and I've had it go both ways. I've endured the success of the great ones and I've endured the pain of the bad ones. So those are the biggest two pieces of advice I would give to them. From a debt perspective, I'd say the majority of the quotes that they'll probably get are probably going to be on a variable rate deal. For that size of a loan and that location, I would guess that they're probably going to be at a SOFR plus 325 to SOFR plus 500, which is probably going to be a little bit higher than they anticipated originally and underwrote it to. The exit would probably be underwritten to a 6.5, I would guess, on a 30-year AM at a 125 DSCR. But, and that's how the current loan should be underwritten as it stands today, meaning on a 6.5, 30-year AM, 125 at stabilization.
When you say at stabilization, do you mean that the DSCR expectation should be based on after they've had the opportunity to execute on their business plan? Are you seeing opportunities for interest-only payments for 1 or 2 years up front for value add investors who have a revenue hump to get over?
Absolutely. We do those deals all day, every day. What deal isn't sold with a pro forma that's a multifamily deal these days? So it's either a really low cap that those non-pro forma deals are being sold at, and usually too low or trying to be too low, let me put it to you that way. So it creates a situation where you have very limited loan amount compared to the value, so limited loan to value, or they're generally a pro forma deal. So we're doing a ton of those deals right now, and some of them are on fixed rate debt from day one, and they have a 2-year interest only period, and then some of them are on a variable rate deal from day one that then they have on variable until they are stabilized and is taken out by a mini perm.
You referenced the importance of high quality local management. Absolutely, 100% agree. Speaking generally when it comes to the execution of the business plan and the overall performance of the assets, specific to the borrowing needs of the ownership group up front upon acquisition, how much does it matter what management company they're going to go with? And is there any value in bringing a local operator into the ownership group or giving the property manager they choose an equity interest in the deal with regards to the lenders and the loan terms that'll be available to them on acquisition?
Not really. Generally, the way that it's looked at is what are the credentials of the managing party? So who are you going to use? They want to understand the game plan associated with it. And then also they'll typically do some sort of vetting on that. So whether that's pulling up their the website and looking at their other properties, or sometimes it's just, hey, give me a short little bio of who you're going to use. And while it may be something on their loan document form that they do internally, does it really make a substantial difference? Not generally, because it's a guess on their part too. They aren't opening up the books of those property managers to validate who they are, unless they are a guarantor on the loan. In that situation, it changes things a little bit, but generally that's not what we're seeing. And sometimes we do actually, but not generally.
So Jacob, we've bounced around the conversation of commercial lending several ways in this episode. I want to bring this to a bit of a conclusion and then we'll transition the episode. But when it comes to what is important for commercial borrowers right now, thinking about acquisitions, at least equally weighted to refinancing deals right now. Very important for borrowers, buyers to have liquidity. As always, the lenders will be focused on the debt service coverage ratio, both day one and pro forma after the opportunity to execute on a business plan. It's important to select a tried and true, proven, experienced local property manager. What other things should commercial real estate buyers right now be focused on with regards to their borrowability?
That's a tough one because you nailed down so many of them, or we nailed down so many of them.
I mean, liquidity, DSCR, local management. Is there anything else? Is that the big three?
Those are the big ones. I would say that cash is king and pick your partners wise. That's the other one. Do your due diligence. Always get a sewer scope. It's important.
Oh, yeah. I'm a major proponent of the sewer scopes. I'm dealing with clay pipes and root balls as we speak.
And inspect what you expect. So just because you got property managers doesn't mean there's nothing to do. There's a million things to do. Everyone likes to talk and act like commercial real estate ownership is a passive thing, but let's not be naive. It is a very active thing that you have to be all over all the time. Otherwise, you're going to lose money and also be taken advantage of. So manage the managers really effectively.
That is excellent advice. On that note, Jacob, what is your best ever advice?
Best ever advice is hire a broker, a loan broker, of course. Go to cruxcre.com and find one of us and talk to us about your loan. That's my best ever advice.
Last question, Jacob, where can people reach out to you?
They can email me at jacob@cruxcre.com, or they can call me on my cell phone. It's on our website.
Awesome. Those links are in the show notes. Jacob, thank you. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this episode, please do subscribe to our show. Leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend you know we can add value to through our conversation today. Thank you and have a best ever day.
Thank you. Appreciate us, Locum.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.